Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello, everyone.
Each week, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 126 is once again being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your
family pet.
So.
Was that scripted or what?
Yeah, sounds like it. Beautiful Lawrenceville, Georgia today.
Ugh, I don't think so. I disagree.
Why do you not think so?
I'm not.
It's 67 to 70 degrees, zero humidity, clear skies, no wind.
Cold.
Okay. Anyway, we'll choose to disagree.
I think it should be sunny and like 92.
Okay.
That's my preferred.
We're moving into fall. Is it officially fall? We've had this discussion. Yes.
I'm pretty sure it's officially fall.
You/y'all said yes, I think, the other day. Anyway.
September 23rd, I'm
myself
pretty sure.
Myself and the Joro spiders are enjoying the weather.
Oh my gosh, the Joro spiders. So. We posted those on our Instagram, and we didn't really get that much interaction, but it's kind of crazy because, like, we have some staff members here in the practice that don't live, like, directly in this area, right? Like, they drive 40 minutes or so.
Right.
Jen Collins specifically, and she was like, oh, my gosh, we don't have these by my house. What?
Yeah.
Like, by my house, literally. Today, I knocked down 3 spider webs and killed 3 Joro spiders. And people are like, oh, why would you kill a spider? Well, first of all, they're as big as my hand, and they're on my deck, and so I don't want my dog to eat them. That's why.
I heard this weekend on the radio, WSB, that those spiders can lay anywhere between 200 and 1,500 eggs.
Per day, or?
Total breeding season.
That's disgusting. Like,
yeah.
So the other day, as you're talking about the weather, I was driving down the road, and... I think I was on my way to the clinic. I don't even remember, but it was kind of a dewy, misty morning. And you know, when you drive by the power lines, how obviously like the power lines, there's like usually one and there's a small space, a second one and a bigger space and the third one.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Well, that bigger space, between the second and third power line, as I was driving by, there was like a web every 2 inches, like
really?
A new web. Yeah. And you could see them all because of the dew and the mist that was on the web. And then with the sun coming in, it was kind of like creepy.
We've talked in the practice. I think we should just use a crop duster to come in and like spray an insecticide. Or what I figured out this past week is undiluted Clorox kills the spiders very quickly.
So does Windex. I found that out today.
Really?
Yeah.
Dehydrates them or something, I wonder?
I don't know.
Desiccates them,
probably just, like, kills them.
Yeah.
No, so there was one I sprayed Windex on, quite frankly, because it's the only bug spray or any kind of spray
okay.
I had.
Windex is not a bug spray.
The only
spray you had.
I said any kind of spray I had.
Okay.
And then he, like, was just kind of chilling in his web, and then I knocked down the 4 corners of the web, and he fell to the ground and just sat there. And so I'm assuming he was dead or debilitated or something along those lines.
He might have just been anesthetized.
But interesting, I keep saying he, but you and some other staff members have said that those large, colorful ones are actually
the
female,
the smaller ones are the males. Oftentimes in the animal kingdom world, yes, that is what happens.
Females are prettier than males, is that what you're saying?
I didn't say prettier, necessarily. That is often the case, but
except
in the insect and arachnid world, oftentimes the female is the bigger of the two.
So, but what about dogs and cats? It's very difficult to tell sometimes, right?
Yeah, doesn't hold true in dogs and cats, to my knowledge. But
so, this past weekend, we were at Pawfest in Lawrenceville on the new Lawrenceville lawn, which is very cool. They have a stage, they had live music, and then they had a bunch of...
Kind of a town center concept that they, have pretty much completed in downtown.
And we were doing some community service, if you will, in regards to support for our nonprofit. We were doing super discounted vaccines.
Right.
Just trying to make sure that the community pets were vaccinated. And so what I found interesting is a lot of people would walk up and they would have their pet, and it appeared, you know, with a pink collar or a neutral colored collar, looked like a girl or looked like a boy. And then by the time you got done talking to them, it was totally opposite.
Yeah.
So case in point, there was this one husky that came up that had like these piercing blue, beautiful eyes. It was a very pretty dog. And I said she, and she was like, oh, it's a he. And I had told her, I'm like, oh, well, he looks like a she to me because her eyes are so pretty.
And she's like, again, it's, yeah.
Yeah, but at the same rate, it's like, it's so hard to tell boys versus
people, i.e. clients and dog and cat owners, that is definitely something that they get offended by if you either mispronounce the name or you miss the gender. I did it this past week. We did surgery. We did a TTA surgery on a dog named Gurley. Right? So
I know exactly where you're going with
right?
this.
Right? So G-U-R-L-E-Y. To me, Gurley, when I hear that, I think of Todd Gurley, the running back for Georgia, who now I believe plays for the L.A. Rams.
I'm pretty sure that's why their dog's name is Gurley.
Okay. Gurley's a female.
And oh, really?
So when I do my call back immediately after surgery, I say, hey, miss,
he's doing great.
Fill in the blank. just calling to let you know that we are done with Gurley's surgery. And he, and right when I say that, I look at our practice management software, and I've got
blaring.
It up in front of me.
It's pink.
And so girls' names are in pink, boys are in blue, and Gurley's name is pink. And so literally within 3 seconds of me saying that, I corrected myself. And when I said, oh, I'm sorry, I meant to say he, and this owner said, well, I was beginning to think you called the wrong owner. And I was like, really? And so I had to kind of explain myself. But that case in point, right? Just
so you explained the whole the girly
got, yeah,
football player.
She got so upset, like, you know, basically, like, how dare you even make, you know, consider
yeah.
making that mistake.
Yeah.
So you know, shame on me. I should have paid more attention. But
no, we get that. We do get that a lot for sure. We were also talking yesterday with an Airedale owner.
Yes.
Right? Do you remember this conversation?
Yep.
And so this lady walks up with her beautiful Airedale. He's maybe a little bit overweight, if we're being honest.
3 years old, I think, or thereabouts.
Yeah, yeah. I do forget his name, for all likes of other things that were going on that day. But, nonetheless, she walks up with his Airedale, and I was like, oh, what a cute little Airedale, right? And so then she doesn't say anything, like, oh, yeah, dang, you got that, like, nobody else guesses an Airedale. So a couple of seconds go by, she fills out her information because we're going to vaccinate her dog. And I was like, it is Airedale, correct? And she was like, oh, yeah. And I was like, how often do you get, like, oh, she was like, oh, my gosh, so many people call him
a doodle,
poodle, and this. And I was like, see, it's like some breeds are not necessarily dead, quote unquote, but like breeds are not known anymore because we have all of these
designer breeds.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. No, I was involved in that conversation. And actually, funny story along the same lines, like 2 hours earlier, maybe at about 11 a.m., we had a white standard poodle come up.
Yeah.
And one of the ladies helping us at the, you know, the low-cost vaccine booth that we did, she could not figure it out. She's like, well, I mean, what kind of doodle is that? Is that a doodle? Is it a golden doodle? I'm like, let's just go ahead and write down on the rabies certificate standard poodle.
Poodle, yeah.
You know, so anyway.
So, but to be fair, that dog was a little bit longer coated than most.
Wasn't, right, recently groomed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, crazy, crazy.
We saw lots of interesting breeds, don't you think?
We did. I mean, we saw, yeah, husky mixes, pit. Not that many pit bulls, actually.
There were a couple,
but
you know what? They were very well behaved.
They were, and a lot of shepherds and shepherd mixes. German shepherds are really super popular again all of a sudden.
Yeah. I don't know if it's like the cartoons and things like that that have all these like dogs in them, because, you know, like, Paw Patrol has dogs, and
yeah.
What's the other one I'm thinking of? It was like a movie, a
Scooby
Pixar
Dude.
Movie. No. It's a Pixar movie. It has like two of them. Is it called Pets? Pets 2? It might be that. Anyways, they have all these breeds, right? And like, I think there's a German Shepherd in there.
Did you see? We didn't talk about this. The juvenile fawn English Mastiff walking around. He did not come up. You didn't see him.
I didn't see him.
He caught my eye. That's, as you know, that I've had three,
mm-hmm.
I guess, in the past. We had a big apricot English Mastiff come up. What was his name?
Boba.
Boba.
Yeah.
As in Boba Tea.
Boba Tea.
He was very well behaved.
Yeah. Big dude, though.
You know, we probably vaccinated 75 to 80 dogs yesterday, and you escaped only with a scratch on your left or right inside elbow.
Yep, right.
And I escaped by only getting bitten twice by the same dog.
But not to break the skin, right? It was like a little Jack Russell-y, beagle-y mix, and he kind of nibbled
Chihuahua
on you a little,
little
bit.
Thing, yes, that you went to pick him up, and he thought it was cool just to chew on you about 14 times, and then, yeah, so that happened twice.
For the most part, though, we saw really well-behaved dogs that came over to us. However, we did see a lot of dogs, and we did talk to a lot of people about their dogs that literally lacked in socialization.
And, yeah.
There was a family that walked up with a young Cane Corso, and they had asked us if we did ear cropping. And so we're like, no, we don't really do ear cropping here in our practice. That can be a podcast for a future topic and conversation. But we don't necessarily do cosmetic ear cropping and tail docking.
We don't do it.
Well, I'm saying necessarily, like if there was a dog fight and the dog needed his pinna taken, we would remove the pinna, the ear
or
flap.
Same thing, a white cat with squamous cell carcinoma on the tip of its ear. Yes.
Yes, but we don't do cosmetic, like breed conditioned, whatever, ear cropping. The dog was cute. He was very young. He probably was like 4 months old, but super, super skittish. Did not like to walk around. Was very unnerving about the noises that he was hearing. And it's so sad, I guess. And these people, they want nothing more but for their pet to share this experience with them. But like just the fear and anxiety that was happening
hard time
in those
coping.
Pets. It was so, so sad.
Not socialized. We've been talking about this for 18 to 20 months, you know, with COVID. And honestly, it's not all COVID, right? The trend, this quote-unquote trend, has been going on for the last 20 years.
Of course.
So when pets have gone from the barn, right, to the front porch, to into the house, and then now into the bed. It's just a different situation for them and for us, and sometimes we fail to properly, socialize and. I'm thinking kind of like the whole imprinting situation, but that's not
us. I feel like we as people, right, we take for granted other beings' feelings and thoughts if we're not aware of them. And I think for the most part, the general public is not aware of the feeling that their pet is exhibiting when they walk backwards and try to walk out of a leash, right? Like instead of walking forward and those kinds of things. Interestingly enough, do you remember there was a man and woman, husband and wife duo, they came up and they had a small child and they had like a 12-year-old border collie. And they had said that their dog has just over the last year, like really developed these anxieties. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was super interesting for this like 12-year-old dog.
I remember the dog in particular and talking to the gentleman that helped us to hold. And the dog did fine.
The dog did great.
Us.
Yeah.
But
she was not fearful enough to be aggressive. She was just like anxious.
Just shaking
like,
in her
I'm
boots.
Outside of my house. Why did you take me out of my house?
Yeah. So maybe we're putting our pets in those situations more so than ever, right?
Yeah.
If the dog was not that way for 10 years, but now we're taking. You know, we're taking our pets to fireworks shows. We're taking them to these, you know, paw fests, you know, with all these other people and pets around.
With this very loud live music.
Yeah, yeah. So yesterday also, during the event, a 2-year-old dog had a grand mal seizure. First time ever per the owner. And
so German short hair pointer.
Yeah.
Not necessarily breed specific.
Correct. Very much, you know, when you think about anywhere between 6 months of age and 2 years of age, usually these guys and girls are going to have a seizure disorder that we wind up diagnosing as idiopathic epilepsy, right? So that's like the epileptic person that we never find a structural or chemical cause, but they just have epilepsy. And so that's kind of what idiopathic epilepsy is in animals. And so,
Do you feel like overall we're seeing just more epilepsy in dogs, like generally? I feel like
I don't think so.
I feel
honestly,
like we're talking about it more and seeing it more, but maybe it's just all in my brain. Like
I don't personally feel that way. I've had a pet, you know, in the past it's had epilepsy. My daughter is an epileptic as well, and so I'm kind of, I guess, used to it. And yeah, I don't. I Personally, I don't think so, but I could be wrong.
I'm just thinking, so, like, I have a family member who has a dog with epilepsy, right? German Shepherd. But I feel like there has been more conversation, more dogs lately in the practice that are developing it. And so maybe here's the thought for, like, some vet student in a capstone project or something, someone going, maybe, I don't know, like, is it an actual uptick in
retrospective seizure? Study could be done to kind of look at the number of cases for sure.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, like, what is it? Yeah. Is it all of the additives in the foods and these kinds of things? Is it, I don't know.
Yeah.
More stimulation. So I guess, where were you going down that road with this dog?
Not really. I mean, I just spoke with these owners. They're not clients of ours. And we kind of talked about, you know, what most likely is going on and what the recommendations were, which the recommendations at that moment were, go ahead and go, you know, be seen at a veterinary hospital. Let's do some blood work, do some basic testing to try to see if there's something going on outside the brain causing the seizure. And then usually we stop at that point and we wait on another seizure to happen. And so, in speaking with them, I asked them, is this the first time you've ever brought your dog to an event like this? And they said, well, no, we've been to a dog park. We've been to other, you know, outside activities, if you will. But my impression was this is the first time that dog has been around this many people and other pets. And it was just overstimulated, which probably, you know, kind of pushed it over that seizure threshold level and made it have the seizure. And so, I don't know.
So let's say, right, so we have some pets that come into the practice, and there used to be a pet, I'm terrible, I can't remember the name of the pet at all, but I know the family was from Germany, and they had recently moved to Colorado.
Yes.
But there was a dog that would come into the practice, and literally, as it crossed the threshold of the front door, would have a seizure.
Yep.
And I think there is another dog right now in our practice that
comes
is doing
in for
the same
grooms
thing.
And yes. Very, yes.
So if it comes through the front door for whatever reason, I don't know, smells, sounds, people, whatever it is, the dog has a seizure. So if, let's say that this German Shepherd Pointer that's 2 years old, if he doesn't have a seizure, but then next year they attend another outdoor dog event and the dog has another seizure, is it true? Like, would it just be enough to not go to those types of events?
Yeah, that's what I would recommend. We can either medicate your dog for the rest of its life, or we can maybe change the situation and not put, I think it was a her, in that situation to set her up for another seizure.
Interesting.
You know, and so my, I'm trying to think back years, probably 20 years ago, our English Mastiff, whose name was Niles, anytime and every time we would have guests over, whether it was one person or 50 people.
Doesn't matter if it's the same person or whatnot.
Correct. Okay. When the doorbell would ring or the knock would happen, he would get so excited. He would run up. He would greet them. Pet me, love me, love me. I just want attention. Within 8 to 10 minutes of that event, he would start running towards the back door, turn the corner, slip and fall, and have a grand mal seizure every time.
Hmm.
Every single time.
So you say every time. How many times did it happen until you were like, okay, we can't have people over?
Well, I mean, probably 6 to 12 times. I mean, we started picking up on it, and then we're just like, this can't be true. It can't be true.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it took us a little while to figure it out. But every single time, it was just amazing.
Hmm.
You know, you could keep him calm and let him slowly interact, but it was just that introduction of new people, and he would get so overly excited in a good way,
mm-hmm.
that it would push him over a seizure threshold. So
that's so crazy.
Super weird.
So does every person and pet, maybe you can't speak to people, but does every pet have a seizure threshold?
Well, I mean, epileptics do. I mean, I guess maybe they do, right? And maybe mine is extremely high, which as far as I know is why I've never had a seizure.
Hmm.
But it's just kind of, you know, misfiring of the neurons, that happens. And so, and then once that happens, all your neurons just kind of start firing off at the same time, which makes you have that convulsion typically, which that can look like anything. But, I guess along while we're on the whole seizure talk here, what are the three phases of a seizure? Do you recall?
Preictal.
Ictal.
Ictal, post-ictal.
Yep.
Okay.
So Ichthys or Ichthyol
I was
is.
thinking, hold on, wait. You had to help me out because I was thinking if it's pre-ictal and post-ictal, is it ictal or is there some other word? That's where my brain was going.
So that's kind of the scientific terminology for a seizure, ictal or ictus, ictal event or ictus. I'm not really sure why that is, but
Dr. Reese.
the pre Dr. Reese, the pre-ictal phase, usually every pet before they have a seizure, they're going to do something a little bit out of the
Some sort of
ordinary,
telltale sign,
whether it's staring
telltale
off into
sign.
space, or they're not responding, or they just kind of stop and pause, or whatever it is. Each individual pet is different. And so that always precedes a seizure. And then you have that seizure or that ictal event, which can be staring off into space, acting like you're trying to catch a fly out of space, or it can be a full-blown convulsion. Maybe you lose control of you or your pet loses control of your bowels or your bladder. And that can last anywhere from, a few seconds to a few minutes. And it feels like it's forever. The poor lady yesterday at the event, she was a nurse, and she was so shaken. She was trembling in her voice that they called me over after the pet had had the seizure. And it was recovering. It was kind of in its post-ictal phase. But she was just, I mean, her voice was trembling, and she was extremely upset. And she, I talked about, I'm like,
But she was a human
yeah. And
nurse.
she's like, I can deal with people, but my animal. And I'm like, well, I'm just the
I was
opposite.
gonna say exactly the same, right? Like same but opposite.
But so the ictal event, it tends to be repetitive, with future events, is how you know that it is actually a seizure. And then the post-ictal event is kind of the recovery phase. And so some pets are just a little bit weak and wobbly, and it takes them a while before they can, stand up and walk without wobbling and falling over or stumbling. My particular Mastiff Niles would go blind for about 15 to 20 minutes every time. And so weird, right? But the whole pre-ictal and post-ictal events were always the same every time, and that's how you kind of know it's a seizure event.
Sure, and you start picking up on those preictal
Yeah.
senses and that kind of thing. But it happens so quick, right?
Yeah, it does, but it seems like forever during that whole seizure event. And so
Sure.
I guess lastly on the topic, we've had a few pets of late. We had one this past week that had a syncopal event to where the animal actually seems to be doing fine and all of a sudden basically faints or collapses.
Falls, yeah, usually to a side, one side or the other.
But they're usually not having the convulsion. They don't lose control of their urinary bladder or their bowels, but they're kind of laid out for a while, and then they recover
Are you
much more
referring
quickly.
to the chocolate lab, the older chocolate lab that
Yes,
was
yes.
scheduled to have a dental procedure this weekend or this
Yeah,
week? Okay.
yeah. And then, we had a case months ago that there was concern, was it syncope or seizure? And, that, in our opinion, was absolutely a grand mal seizure
Yeah,
versus a syncopal event. So,
sure.
anyway, we just have kind of rambled. We didn't really have an agenda today.
No, but the Paw Fest, I mean, it's good to be out in the community. It's nice to see people. It's nice to see people who want to be out, but it is very, very interesting. We saw two cats at Paw Fest yesterday.
A bearded dragon.
Oh, and a bearded dragon. And I just think it's so interesting that people want to bring their cat to a dog event.
Yeah.
Or they want to bring their bearded dragon to a dog event and leave their dog at home. That family specifically said they have a
Yeah. Oh,
dog.
we have a dog, but yeah.
Yeah, so they left their dog at home, but they brought their bearded dragon. And then there was another lady who had brought like a little black kitten, I think, to I guess I'm assuming surrender or get help from the Humane Society
Adoption,
that was
yeah.
there.
She walked out with that carrier. I'm not sure the cat was in the carrier. I'm assuming it was,
Yeah, I don't know.
but why do people attend these events? So, clearly the persons with the huge Great Dane, the huge, Mastiff, they're so proud of their dogs,
Of
right? It's like, look at
course.
me, and they should be because they're beautiful animals, and it, I just. Again, it's kind of like, look at me, here's me and my dog walking. There are other people that have their dogs or, other pets that are absolutely part of their family. They're experiencing these festivals with them. Maybe
there were so many people yesterday that said that they were bringing their pet to socialize it, which I think is so interesting because that to me is not socialization.
That's not how you would do it. You would go to an obedience class, right?
Yeah,
in our opinion.
That is not socialization.
And there were people out there, you know, with obedient dogs, and they were making them sit, and they were stopping while crossing the road and look at me. And then there were dogs from 6 months or six, not 6 weeks, 12 weeks of age, all the way up to 12 years of age, that were just all over the place. I saw a man make his dog jump up on top of a column, like 4 feet off the ground, for somebody to take a picture of. And again, there's a pride factor, there's this involvement, there's family members, it's all over the place.
But nonetheless, let's not discount the human-animal bond.
So that's exactly where I was going. The bond, and the bond is different between people.
Every pet and owner had a different relationship, but they had a relationship.
They had a relationship, exactly.
That is so important to people. And it should,
be, because
it's
otherwise...
It's so interesting. I mean, that's why we have pets, right? Like, we want that companionship. We want that interaction. And then it's kind of like social media. If you don't get to show anybody else, like, how cool you and your dog are together, like, then what's... Almost like, what's the sense of having this awesome relationship?
Yeah. So I will tell a story on me, you know, kind of, I feel like maybe I was being negative on some of the people's relationships yesterday. My border collie I used to have shortly after college, he was an awesome frisbee catcher. I could throw it as far as I could catch it. Dylan would run as fast as he could, jump up, catch it, twist, turn, land. And boy, did that make me feel good if somebody saw him do that. It made me feel good just for me to see it.
Of course.
But, you know, it's like, yeah, that's my dog. Like, and like I did
like
not really teach him that.
Yeah,
I mean, it was instinctively. But yeah, it's a very complicated relationship. But yeah, relationship, I think, is huge there. And that's, you know, I guess I'll kind of circle back to the whole why we do what we do. We definitely like to celebrate that human-animal bond.
Of course.
We have the same relationship with our patients. Not the same. Let me back up. We have a very strong relationship, and we feel very obligated to take care of those pets. Same thing with the pet parents, right? We're trying to do the best job we can. We are human. We are not perfect ever, even though we strive to be that. But we get a lot of satisfaction in our clinics from taking excellent care of our pets and our pet parents. I'll go there. Our team members, right? I mean, I love that we have so many employees, and hopefully we are providing a really awesome work environment for them and helping them to kind of be themselves and their families. And then just like yesterday, you know, helping out in our community as we can, when we can. The older I get, which I continue to get older every day, fortunately.
Thankfully, right?
Yes. You know, priorities change. And, you know, now I'm really into mentoring new veterinarians that are on our staff. And really, even if they're not on our staff, you know, people like Graham, hopefully he'll join us. He may or may not. But trying to kind of give back a little bit. So, again, community, profession, staff members as well. Anyway, I'll quit.
Where I think you are going with the whole human-animal bond is it's truly, we do have a satisfaction in this industry to help pets, essentially in turn helping people, right? And that is why we truly have this whole healthy pet, happy life situation. Mm-hmm. If we can keep your pet healthy, then you and your pet are going to have a stronger, longer, happier life.
Yeah.
And so I think that's, if I could put words in your mouth, I think that's where you're going with it.
Yeah. So I just, when you were starting to talk about that, I was just thought, like, the world of finance or the, you know, mergers and acquisitions, the business world, that's not a component of what they do. It's all about maybe a victory or defeat and about the dollars saved or earned. You know, what other aspects, what other emotions come into those deals? And so we're a bit unique, and I think the human healthcare field is going to be very similar to us.
Sure.
But yeah, it's not about the deal or the dollars. It's about, I guess, helping.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
for
I'll
sure.
go back to the whole caring aspect. So
let's go down the road, and I I thought I wasn't going to bring this up, but I'm going to. Have you, do you own any Peloton equipment?
Own a bike that's like a Peloton, but it's not a
It's
Peloton.
n but do you
But I
own
have the
anything
app.
branded from Peloton? Okay.
No.
So, recently it came about that Peloton offers discounts to doctors,
So Dr.
nurses.
Yi
Okay,
mentioned this
wait.
to me, so.
So, Peloton offers discounts to doctors, nurses, teachers, frontline workers. There's like a handful of things, right? There is this, I guess.
So they're trying to get the equipment into the hands of the people that would recommend their
Yeah, so
product to
that they
other
can, I think
consumers?
their theory, and I do not own any Peloton equipment myself, but I think the thought process behind that is yes, like let's keep these people who are helping other people in our communities, let's get them healthy and get them strong with whatever, a treadmill, a bike, weights, whatever,
But
and so that
also
they can continue
ambassadors
to
of
keep
their
going.
brand, wouldn't you think?
Exactly. Yes, of course. And
Okay.
so we've talked long and hard about, maybe not on this podcast, but between you and I, about the emotional and health state of veterinarians and veterinary staff, and how people get defeated and how they feel victimized and that kind of thing and whatever. There is this social media post that's going around where a veterinarian ordered a Peloton treadmill.
And wanted his or her
It was a
discount.
her, and then she had inquired about the discount. And the rebuttal was that you are not an actual doctor. And that has just blown the industry up. Because it's not, and Peloton's world, I have no idea. I really want to know what their
Had they
stance is.
responded with a statement? Do you know?
So I don't think a public statement because I don't know that it's really gotten that big.
Okay.
But what I saw in emails back and forth were there are a couple of Peloton customer service people who keep relying back on their, we provide this discount to doctors. You're not an actual
Oh,
doctor.
yeah, we are actually. Yeah.
But so that's the thing. And so now this veterinarian is like, it is really not about the discount anymore. It is now about
The label or the, yeah.
the social aspect of like, you know what, Peloton? You're not the only people that actually look at us this way.
Yeah.
It's you're not the only people. Like I did my education. I know, you know, my species, my anatomy. Like I know all of this, and yet you're gonna sit here and you're gonna discredit me that I'm not an actual doctor and that I should do these things out of the goodness and love of my heart.
Way
And
back
so,
when, we used to say an RD, a real doctor. So that's what
yeah.
Peloton is saying. Like an MD is an RD. They're a real doctor. But a DVM or a VMD, you're not a real doctor. Yeah.
Yeah, and so,
Yeah.
but it doesn't say MD or medical
Yeah.
doctor or
What
DMD,
about if you
doctor
have
of.
a doctor of philosophy? If you're, you
Exactly. So
know,
what if you have a PhD in, you know,
are they
literature?
real doctors according to Peloton? So maybe our audience could
I
like get a
know.
little, you know.
So again, I am not a doctor by any means, but I don't know. I mean, I do hold a state license as a veterinary technician. Like, would I be offended if I went to Peloton and I said, you know, like, well, you're offering this discount to nurses. Like, why am I not considered
Yeah.
a veterinary nurse?
That's a whole nother
That is a whole other
topic
thing.
as far as
But
veterinary nurses versus nurses, but
nonetheless,
yeah.
right? Like, I think it is so interesting.
Yeah.
It's so interesting to me. And so kudos to this veterinarian who's out there trying to get the word out. And I totally 100% wholeheartedly stand behind her in the sense that it is not about the discount anymore, but it's truly about the recognition of the
The
profession.
label and
Stop act. So, and then there are comments as well on like Peloton's site about how this veterinarian is obviously she's in one of the highest paid industries.
Oh, really?
It's so interesting the perception of this social aspects that people think that veterinarians were so highly
that's a
paid,
whole nother subject we could go down.
but
You know,
yet.
people and what they, the value of what we do for their pets, you know, and we're supposed to do an exploratory laparotomy and remove a gallbladder and hospitalize the dog for
And
5 days
have
and have
Now
it live.
don't let
Yeah.
it pass on
And
the
then the
table.
bill is $2,000, $3,000, $4,000. Oh my gosh, how dare you? You know, so anyway,
I'm getting you
I
hot.
kind of like, well, yeah, let the
I'm
cat out
getting
of the
you
bag there.
hot.
So I'm gonna
Yeah, so
stop,
no,
but
but nonetheless, my I did like I said, I told myself I wasn't gonna bring that one up, but Hopefully other people can kind of stand behind veterinarians in the veterinary community when it comes to companies like Peloton and others who are leading a social impact that veterinarians are not real doctors, because it couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah. Okay. Healthy pet, happy life. You brought that up.
I did.
We need to continue pushing that that whatever forward.
So, yeah, but let's go down a similar but different road. So, happy life.
Yeah.
Healthy pet. Maybe the healthy pet in this story doesn't necessarily equate, but in North Carolina recently from a Humane Society, there was a 19-year-old cat that was adopted by a 101-year-old woman.
Huh.
And the reason they adopted a 19-year-old cat is, I'm hoping for obvious reasons, right? Like, the age relation and whatnot. But I think the family of the 101-year-old woman, whose name is Penny, reached out to the agency and asked if they could adopt this 19-year-old cat. The lady was just looking for companionship, and apparently the lady and the cat hit it off seamlessly. And I think that's a great story of the healthy life aspect of what healthy pets can bring for you.
Happy life, yeah, yeah. For sure, for sure.
Did I say healthy life? I meant happy life.
Yeah, we use, I mean, you've heard me, the audience heard me, I get it all confused because it's all intermingled, but it's the relationship.
One equals the other and back and forth, yeah.
It's the health of the pet and the people that own the pet. It's the happiness of the pet. It's the happiness of the people. Mm-hmm. It's all interchangeable. And one day we will figure out how to trademark this a little bit more and just push it out. I mean, it's in my mind, your mind. Mm-hmm. We just don't know how to share it with the world, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's a super cool concept, and we'll continue working on branding it and moving it forward. So
one last story real quick. I know you kind of hit the clock mm-hmm. on me, like we're running out of time here. But Dr. Miller, where are you from in Texas?
South of Lubbock, Texas, a little town. Well, not a little town. I mean, it's a substantial town of like 487 people called Ropesville.
That's hysterical. So did you say Lubbock, Texas?
Yes.
Okay. So recently I read a news article about this man and woman who were boarding a plane or getting on a plane in Lubbock, Texas. And of course, like dog, Lubbock, Texas, whatever, like as I read things, like certain things stick out, right? So I read through the rest of it. And so the article, basically, I forget the title of the article. Do you remember?
No.
It was like, man and woman find dog and suitcase.
Find dog and suitcase on trip to Las Vegas from Lubbock.
So silly. So anyways, I'm reading it and I'm like, how in the heck did they get their dog to Vegas? Like, doesn't their like check baggage go through x-ray as well? So anyways, I obviously started reading, and there was a man and woman who live in Lubbock, Texas, and they were getting their suitcases packed and ready to go to Las Vegas. And when they were at the airport, they got to the counter and they put their suitcase on the scale, and it was a couple pounds over. And so instead of paying the fee, they pulled their bag down, opened it up in the middle of the airport, which I've done.
Yep.
Can be totally embarrassing, but obviously
stuff from
like
one piece to the other.
Yep. So I'm going to take it out of the suitcase and shove it in my backpack. But anyways, when they open the suitcase, out pops their little chihuahua, Icky.
Gosh.
And so apparently Icky popped out of this man's boot, his like cowboy boot. And I just think that's so funny. So also kind of sad for the dog, but obviously, hopefully they weren't packed up very long and the dog wasn't in there very long or whatever.
So we briefly talked about this story because I think both you and I, when we read it, we're thinking how... They got to Las Vegas or wherever they were going, and
they
found their dog in their suitcase. Like, they went to the hotel room, right?
Yeah, that's my thought.
And so that makes me think about the way luggage is handled at airports is a whole nother topic.
Oh, gosh.
There probably should be regulations, federal regulations on, why do they always throw your luggage? They always
face
do the
down.
Face down,
yeah.
And they throw it as hard as they can
possibly get it.
And if your luggage is first on, it's last off. And I mean, there's all these issues, right?
Yes, of course.
But I'm just thinking about this poor dog, got banged around, got thrown in the belly of the plane, no climate control,
right.
Got thrown around again.
Yes. And
ultimately
then,
came out on the baggage claim, right?
On the carousel.
Probably somebody picked up the luggage. It was wrong. They threw it back down.
Not
and
mine.
Then, but yeah, to your point,
as
this
you
happened
read it, yeah, it
before
doesn't, it
the
didn't
flight.
Quite happen like that.
Yeah. And then fortunately, they being the owners and travelers were able to call, I guess, a family or
Yeah,
friend,
someone to
family
come
member or
get the dog.
friend.
But just how silly, right?
Yeah.
Like you open your suitcase and like out pops your little chihuahua out of your shoe.
Yeah, that would be
It's
like,
so
I
bizarre.
mean, yeah, I wonder what they were thinking, what that
Yeah.
emotion was. They're
Well,
like,
from what I understand from reading the article, the man and woman say that the dog usually likes to lay in their laundry, like in laundry
very
piles.
underneath, yeah.
And so, I mean, I guess if you're
Suitcases
packing up a
open, they're
suitcase, you got
packing.
your shoes and stuff in there, the dog's buried in
The guy
there.
probably had to sit on it to get the zipper closed.
Oh my gosh. But it was such a, I don't know, a heartwarming story, I guess.
I wonder
Silly.
what the little dog felt like, right? Like when the
Like
suitcase
being
got
zipped up.
closed and
So
zipped
is
up.
it a comforting feeling or not?
Depends on how,
Okay, right? But the whole weighted blanket thing, like people certainly right now are being comforted by
Oh, yeah.
like being snugged. The whole theory of a thunder shirt for dogs, like that is this acupressure and the fact that it's hugging the dog in all
We,
these like
my daughter
places.
loves her weighted blanket. I mean, she
Yeah.
just loves
So
that. And
did the
so,
dog feel safe and secure whether or not he was like upright or laying down or wheeled across
that's
the
crazy. He
concrete?
got turned up,
You know, did it
rolled, thrown
matter?
down.
I
So,
don't know.
crazy, crazy story. But yeah,
If dogs could talk,
yeah.
I would want to interview Icky out of Lubbock, Texas.
Yeah, maybe we'll
So.
try to reach out and see.
All right, guys. Check in next week as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. You can find our podcast on our website under resources, but no matter what, wherever you're getting our podcast from, please hit subscribe. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.